Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, Public Health for the Public. Hi, I am Dr. Jim McDonald, Medical Director of the Rhode Island Department of Health.
And I'm Dr. Philip Chan. Welcome, everyone.
Dr. Chan, great to see you again today. And today we have a guest. We have Dr. Amy Nunn. And Dr. Amy Nunn, we are so glad to have you back on the podcast. You're one of the few people who've actually we've had back already. We've talked before about a very important topic, you know, living with cancer. Now we're talking about another important topic, hunger. Gosh, when you really talk about life issues, hunger is one of those ones that I don't care who you are. You know, most people can identify with it, but we really can't identify with it because it's such a big issue. But it's such a popular issue in Rhode Island too, not just our state, but even in this country and quite frankly in the world. And when you think about one of those basic human things that we all need is we all need food and drink. So hunger is one of those things that I think all of us care deeply about, particularly in public health. So Dr. Nunn, I want to welcome you. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with hunger and dealing with this as a public health issue in Rhode Island?
Sure. I'm executive director of the Rhode Island Public Health Institute. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization located on the west side of Providence. And we also own and operate Open Door Health, which is the state's first and only LGBTQ clinic. We also oversee several food-related hunger alleviation programs. One is called Food on the Move, which is a mobile produce market that serves about 5,000 Rhode Islanders across the state. And we have a project and a program that doubles the value of SNAP dollars when people shop with their EBT cards. So SNAP refers to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is a program by the USDA. A lot of people know that by its former name, which were food stamps. Now all of those programs have been digitized and people receive their SNAP benefits on little cards called EBT cards, electronic benefit transfer cards. And we have a project that doubles the value of the dollar when people shop with EBT for fruits and vegetables. And that program, we have built the scientific evidence base for it over the years. It's been in operation now for nearly a decade, first as a research project and now as a program that we oversee at the Rhode Island Public Health Institute. So that's how I got started with this work. But our project only serves about 5,000 people. And there are 180,000 SNAP beneficiaries across the state. We would love to take what we're doing that has been so effective in getting people to buy more produce by making it more accessible and more...
Making it more available, quite frankly, and making it less expensive, right? I mean, because quite frankly, everyone wants to make their dollars spend wisely. But quite frankly, if you're living with a supplemental nutrition assistance program and you can get twice the value for fruits and vegetables, that's got a lot of public health benefit. Tell me, food insecurity, what are your concerns about that? And how do we bring Dr. Nunn into this conversation?
Yeah, so first off, I want to welcome Dr. Nunn to the podcast. I will say, in full disclosure, I've known Dr. Nunn for over a decade now. We've done a lot of research related to various health and HIV prevention and other things. And I work with her over at Rhode Island Public Health Institute in our clinic, Open Door Health. So we know each other quite well. I will say I've learned a lot from Dr. Nunn about food insecurity and hunger in general in Rhode Island. And I was quite surprised to learn some of the background about this project. Dr. Nunn, talk to us a little bit for those of us that maybe don't see this or work with food or hunger issues on a daily basis. Talk to us about how much of a problem is this in Rhode Island? Is it really a problem here in Rhode Island?
Well, we had made a lot of progress in the last decade, gone from about 14 or 15% of people experiencing food insecurity at some time during the month to now record high levels as a result of the economic crisis after COVID. So one in four Rhode Islanders, four, 25% of people experience food insecurity in Rhode Island. And that means that they may not know what they're going to eat tomorrow or how they're going to feed their family tomorrow. And that also includes a lot of children. So there are many children around the state going hungry, having children homeschooled doing virtual learning has compounded this because a lot of children get their primary source of nourishment at public school. And so the problems have really been compounded by the pandemic. And also, I'll add that a lot of people really want to eat healthy fruits and vegetables, but can't afford to. So what we see happen a lot is that people are able to eat fruits and vegetables at the beginning of the month when they have their SNAP benefits, but those run out for large families, usually around the 5th or the 10th of the month at the latest. So we find people not knowing what they're going to eat the next day, and also not being able to eat healthy after their SNAP benefits run out.
Yeah, and that really is what food insecurity is. It's really, people have food insecurity. They just don't know where the next meal is coming from. And that's an awful place to be. And I want to connect this to the notion of obesity. I was surprised to learn that at least in Rhode Island, we have one of the highest obesity rates in the country. But how do supplemental nutritional assistance program or SNAP incentives relate to healthy eating behaviors? And how do I connect food insecurity to obesity? Because one would initially think if people can't get food, you know, they would be losing weight. But that's really the opposite of what's happening, isn't it?
Right. So what happens with a lot of folks is that they end up eating calorie rich, but nutrient poor foods. You can imagine starchy foods that are heavily processed.
Yeah, those pastas, processed foods, right? Yeah.
Chips, things like that, that have a lot of calories, but don't have a lot of nutritional content. Soda is a big one. Also, can fill your stomach and has a lot of calories, but has almost zero nutritional value.
And yeah, soda is really empty, isn't it? And it's funny, you remind me of this thing I've noticed in my own life is that, you know, real foods are nutrient rich, but processed foods are calorie rich. And, you know, I think about why foods are processed in the first place. Foods aren't processed to make them healthier. They're processed to make them more affordable, more transportable, and quite frankly, more palatable for people. But they're not processed to make them more nutritious, are they?
No, or to make things last longer is the other main reason.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, you know, eating well is expensive. And so what SNAP does and what SNAP incentives do is they make the healthy choice more affordable. And that's why SNAP incentives are so popular. It is a market-based solution to a public health problem. So in Congress, when these things come up for congressional appropriation, they often enjoy bipartisan support. Democrats often, and I don't want to be overly prescriptive, but often are sympathetic because they are often support hunger alleviation efforts. And Republicans often like market-based solutions. So what SNAP incentives do is make fruits and vegetables more affordable for people who want to make healthy choices, but who can't afford to buy fruits and vegetables.
So Dr. Nunn, you have a sugary beverage tax, an initiative that REPHI is leading in front of the legislature, the state legislature. Tell us about what a sugary beverage tax is and how it relates to some of the things we're talking about.
So as I mentioned, hunger, particularly among children, is at an all-time high here in Rhode Island. And we're proposing extending SNAP benefits for fruits and vegetables with a state-sponsored program. This program would be funded by a nominal tax on sugary beverages, so 1.5 cents per ounce, or about 18 cents per can, to put it in context that people know and understand. This has been done in several major cities around the country: Philadelphia, San Francisco, Boulder, Colorado, Berkeley, California, and in 42 countries around the world. So we are one of the few industrialized countries that does not yet have a sugary beverage tax. What we're proposing doing is, and what these bills propose, which are House Bill 5715 and Senate Bill 0327, funding hunger alleviation efforts by a small tax on sugar sweetened beverages.
Yeah. So Dr. Nunn, this is like in other parts of the country, this is called like a soda tax, right? And because soda is one of the most popular sugary beverages out there. And it's interesting, you know, as someone who used to drink a lot of Diet Coke, like I used to drink a lot of Diet Coke, Dr. Nunn, I found out a couple things. One is I didn't lose weight while drinking it, but it really wouldn't involve diet beverages, or would it? I mean, are we talking about a soda tax on diet beverages or not?
No. So this particular legislation excludes diet sodas. Not all countries have done that. We decided to do that because we wanted essentially to discourage consumption of large quantities of sugar that are unhealthy, but it includes more than sodas. There are plenty of other drinks that it does include, like sports drinks, things like Snapple, for example, that have high added sugars. So anything also that's whose main ingredient is milk is also excluded. This bill also has an exemption for small businesses with less than $2 million of revenue.
Yeah, Dr. McDonald, it reminds me of the time I went through a phase as well where I drank a lot of Mountain Dew. I feel like I was addicted to that for a couple of years, and it probably took a couple of years off my life.
It's funny you bring this up. I got rid of Diet Coke about 4 years ago, and I don't think anyone who knew me well would have ever thought I did that. But it's what I learned about me was I had obstructive sleep apnea. And once I had my sleep apnea treated with my CPAP machine, I didn't need caffeine anymore. And it was funny. I will say this. I'll never forget the morning I woke up after my sleep study with the machine on one night. And I said to the respiratory therapist, is this how people feel? He says, what do you mean? I says, I don't know. I feel like awake and alert and like I can think. And it was an amazing experience to actually feel what it's like to be well rested after all those years of not. So my wife sort of telling me I was snoring too loud was not something I should have gone on with as many years as I did. So, but that's not our topic today. Back to the topic at hand. So food insecurity, hunger, sugary beverage tax. How does that connect to healthy food? And how does it not just connect to more money to the general treasury? Because I think people are like sort of just saying, why tax people just put more money in the treasury? I mean, if we tax my Coca-Cola or my Snapple, are we going to just fill up potholes in Rhode Island? Because that's not really how I want my tax dollars used. So where is this money going to go and how's it going to be helpful to public health?
So the Department of Administration estimated that this would raise about $45 million.
All right, I got to give you a wow. That's a wow.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of resources. It's certainly a lot more than other things that have been mentioned during this legislative session. For example, the marijuana tax. And we commissioned some economists to conduct a study about how much it would cost to implement a statewide SNAP incentive program for all SNAP recipients. And they estimated it would cost $25 to $30 million. So this legislation more than pays for itself. The monies will first be earmarked for the SNAP incentive hunger alleviation program with the focus on children. And there will still be residual tax revenue that could be allocated or earmarked for another source or which could go into the general fund. If people don't want to be subject to the tax, they can just switch to alternate beverages. So people have a choice here. It's not that everything will be taxed. People who don't want to pay the tax can drink other things.
So Dr. Nunn, this is all, it sounds like a win-win. It leads people to decrease their consumption of sugary beverages and also provides funding for SNAP incentives. It seems like a win-win. Let me ask you this. How have the beverage companies reacted to this?
So as you might imagine, they have come out in full force politically. They have an army of lobbyists who are targeting the General Assembly and trying to block the legislation. They also propagate myths that I want to just enumerate now to head them off at the pass. One of the things that they have said frequently is that sugary tax beverage taxes are bad for jobs and bad for small businesses, grocery stores, and bottlers. That hasn't borne out in any of the 42 countries or any of the major metropolitan areas that have adopted these taxes. And that is because people switch to water. And this has not been associated with any job loss. It has been associated with dramatic increases in tax revenue. And those are tactics that the industry often uses to scare people. That's because they no longer are in a position scientifically where they can deny that drinking excessive amounts of sugar is bad for you. Much like the tobacco industry did over the last 30 years, they have switched their position to publicly acknowledging, including in last week's legislative sessions, in last week's hearings, that this is bad for people. And so they have not acknowledged that they are trying to promote healthier alternatives. But what they do is try to backdoor and kill the legislation by propagating myths about unemployment and things that are detrimental to economic growth. I just want to say that none of those things have borne out in any of the economic studies that have been conducted. And this has been studied extensively around the world.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you talked a little bit earlier about the pandemic. A lot of us have struggled with the pandemic. And I think obesity is not been lost on a lot of us during the pandemic. In other words, one of the things I think a lot of us would admit is during the year, we were home more. So we quite frankly had more access to food during the day. You know, I mean, if I was at my office, I don't have food there. If I'm home, I do. So, you know, when you drink more sugary beverages and you gain more weight, you actually put yourself at risk for type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes or adult onset diabetes. You know, it's interesting. I have a brother who got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. To his credit, just took that as a wake-up call in life and lost a ton of weight. And then he lost his diabetes. And that's a pretty worthy journey that very few people could make. And, you know, he enjoys my admiration for that journey because I think it's a really worthy thing. But how do sugary beverages contribute to type 2 diabetes in adults? Can we just chat about that a little bit?
They're a major contributor to type 2 diabetes, not just for adults, but also for children. We have alarmingly high rates of diabetes in the state among children, particularly among children of color. We are now ranked 11th in the nation for diabetes prevalence, for obesity among children. That is being driven by our alarming disparities, particularly among Hispanic children. One of the biggest factors that's driving obesity is the predatory marketing by beverage companies who are deliberately and intentionally targeting children of color early in life so that they drink sugary beverages as youth and adolescents and into adulthood. This has been studied and documented extensively. And this legislation really is an effort to blunt the impacts of those types of discriminatory marketing practices that the beverage industry engages in, even in 2021. If you go into communities of color or lower income communities, you will notice that there is much more aggressive marketing by companies like Coke and Pepsi in those communities. And that is because they are intentionally targeting our children.
Yeah, it's sad to hear that. I know that Dr. Nunn, you've done a lot of work in the past on health disparities, and as you're talking about, certainly these marketing techniques, and also sugar and diabetes and some of these chronic health diseases definitely impact certain populations more. And it does sound like this bill will go a long way to addressing some of this. Win-win, you know, decreasing sugary beverage consumption, increasing SNAP incentives. It sounds like a win-win for public health. Talking about sugary beverages and food and nutrition in general, what are some general ideas about how to address food insecurity in general? I mean, is the sugary beverage tax isn't going to fix all the problems. I think it will be a step in the right direction. But what are your thoughts on how to address food insecurity and hunger, specifically in Rhode Island in general?
I think what we have tried to do with this program and with our Food on the Move program is respond to the social and structural determinants of health. One of the observations that we've had is that a lot of people want to eat healthy and can't afford it, or they live in communities where they have limited access to fresh produce. So our Food on the Move program is a mobile produce market that takes healthy options to food deserts and swamps and provides this subsidy in order to make healthy fruits and vegetables more affordable. What we're hoping to do with this program is to bring that SNAP doubling into retail settings like grocery stores. So currently, only organizations that are served by the Rhode Island Public Health Institute and Farm Fresh Rhode Island, which offers a similar program at farmers markets, are able to access this service. But what we're hoping to do is bring this into retail settings and into grocery stores where most people shop.
You know, Dr. Nunn, one of the things that you get me thinking about is when you talk about health disparities, we've seen a lot of health disparities during the pandemic. And, you know, I mean disparities like more cases among people of color. We've seen more hospitalizations, a higher rate than people of color, more deaths. This just seems like one more health disparity. And I think, you know, when I talk about health disparity, I think disparity is not a word that people maybe use all the time, but just simply put, disparity means you're at a disadvantage more so than you should be in life. And it's funny, like when I talk about social determinants of health, I talk about things that a social determinant is. A determinant is something that some people have an advantage in that area, some people have a disadvantage, and it really should be the same for everybody. And when I really get back to this, though, it kind of makes me think that food and access to food is one of those things that, quite frankly, should be available to everybody. And I think things we can do that help food to be available for everybody really has powerful public health benefits. Like one of the things I'm just thinking about is like, if you want to think about some big public health problems to solve, if we get rid of obesity, we're talking about, you know, really reducing diabetes, which really reduces healthcare costs, just makes us all feel better. There's other benefits to reducing obesity too. Little things like your joints don't hurt as much and your breathing isn't as hard and you can run faster and your clothes fit better. There's other benefits too. But when you think of health disparities with this in particular, how would this bill passing help to reduce health disparities? Could you give me some ideas of what that would do? Like, I know you've touched on it a little bit already, but like, how would it help reduce health disparities in Rhode Island if this were to become a law, the sugary beverage tax?
Well, most of the people that are experiencing food insecurity consistently, a lot of them are people who are poor, or people who have lost their employment as a result of COVID, or they are people of color. So I think this is when you ask about the social determinants of health. What is the social determinant of health? That's everything other than going to the doctor, basically, that influences your health opportunities, your opportunity to be a healthy person. Most of the things that influence whether or not you are healthy are not, in fact, don't have anything to do with going to the clinic. About 90% of the things that influence your health and well-being happen outside of a clinical setting. So in order to impact a lot of the things that affect people's health, we have to respond to those things. So poverty, unemployment, and unequal opportunities are a lot of things that can really affect whether or not people are able to afford to eat healthy. This program is designed to take what we already know works in promoting healthy eating behaviors and bring it into grocery stores. So to scale what we have found works with the Food on the Move mobile produce market and to bring it to the people across the state of Rhode Island.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Nunn. And I know we're running short on time here and need to close, but I just want to, again, acknowledge all the work that you've done on behalf of Food on the Move, certainly bringing food to some to folks that don't have good access across Rhode Island. Please do continue your good work there. I will ask you for one last thought, Dr. Nunn. Where can people go to learn more about this initiative and to support it if they wish?
So we have a website, nourishrhodeisland.org. If this kind of program appeals to you, the most important thing you can do today, right now, because this bill is before the legislature, is to call your representative or your senator and let them know that you support House Bill 5715 or Senate Bill 0327. We make this really easy. If you go to our website at nourishrhodeisland.org, you can email your legislator right from that website, and that's nourishrhodeisland.org, and tell your legislator that you support House Bill 5715 and Senate Bill 0327.
Yeah, you know, thank you, Dr. Nunn. That's a good note to end on. And, you know, just for folks who live outside of Rhode Island, if you're a state, you know, that's considering this, I mean, I think it's something just to look at the public health argument. And, you know, one of the things I will throw out is I'm often amazed at how much people just interacting with the legislators makes a difference. You know, one of the things I've just known from legislators is a lot of them are there, quite frankly, just to represent the people who in their community. And when they hear from their people, they are very much influenced by that. And I think it's just important to let our local legislators know how we feel, no matter what state you live in or what country you live in, quite frankly, because that's part of exercising democracy and being part of your government. But I think when you look at options we have for the future, it is odd. We tax a lot of things. We definitely do tax a lot of things, but this is something that when you think about why do we tax things, if you can have the money go towards something that actually provides a public health benefit, I think it's a little bit easier sometimes to maybe tolerate the tax. I was going to say make the tax more palatable, which would probably be a pun that was definitely intended for this conversation. But you know, it's been great having you on our podcast today, talking a lot about food insecurity, talking a lot about a possible sugary beverage tax in Rhode Island. I know it's happened in other parts of the country. It'll be interesting to see if it happens here in Rhode Island. It's not the first year this has been introduced, but it's getting more traction this year than it has in the past. So hopefully we'll see where this thing goes soon. We usually like to end our episodes with a final word from Dr. Chan. Dr. Chan, what's the final word for today?
Great. Thank you, Dr. McDonald. And thank you, Dr. Nunn, again for joining. In closing, I want to leave people with a moment of Zen to consider throughout the rest of your day. And here it is. Sometimes the easiest way to solve a problem is to stop participating in the problem. Thank you all very much and be well.
I want to thank Dr. Amy Nunn. I want to thank our producer, Stephanie Menders. And I want to thank our technical director, Carol Stone. I'm Dr. Jim McDonald. Have a great and keep up the good.